to finally catch up with you. I think you have to be one of the UK's busiest musicians, but you're here, and you're here to talk about your latest album, which is called Return to the Fire.
Yeah.
Now, you decided to release it on a special edition vinyl or download.
That's right.
Why did you decide to do that?
Well, we recorded this over 2 years ago, and we were in a studio. We recorded about 10 tracks, I think. And from there, from the 10, 6 tracks really stood out as being great. And I just wasn't quite sure of the others. It was a band which 20 years ago had got together to create Enter the Fire, and that was an album which I was very proud of. I had to pay for, you know, myself, and I was much younger at the time. And that was the album that Chick Corea first heard, and that sort of landed me the gig with Chick all those years ago. So I thought it would be great to get the same guys back 20 years on and make Return to the Fire. And so we ended up with 6 tracks, which was not really long enough for a CD. But it was quite a retrospective album, you know, these more very acoustic and more deliberate references to some of the earliest music which I was brought up with, you know, listening to people such as Wayne Shorter and his, you know, acoustic groups from much earlier. There's a McCoy China track on there. For example, so a lot of my things have been slightly more kind of hybrid, you know, with classical influences and slightly more kind of European, if you want to put it that way. So with those 6 tracks, making a vinyl seemed perfect, because that too was that the very medium that it was on seemed to have this retrospective quality. It was the perfect album for vinyl. So Dave from Edition Records eventually said, you know, you don't need any more material. Those 6 tracks will do it. So hooray, you know, I've got an excuse to get this music out finally.
how easy was it to get the original musicians together? I do know that you've got a number of new faces in as well.
Yeah, I've kept in touch with many of them, even if it's just sporadic. But Jason Rabella I still work with. So Jason and I go back like 25 years now, and it's great to be working with him again in my very latest project. Others such as Jeremy Stacey, he works a lot in Los Angeles. I think Gerard Presenza is no longer living in the UK either. So it was pretty hard. Mick Hutton, I'd barely see. But it was so great to get together finally when we managed it. You know, we'd kind of pinned down these couple of days. We played and we recorded and went back and listened to it in the control room. And immediately we were all laughing, saying it just sounds like us 20 years ago. It's amazing that, you know, when you get 5 guys together, it kind of, nothing will ever change, you know, in that core fundamental chemistry between the
right.
people. There's such a lot of liveliness, particularly between the rhythm section themselves with Mick, Jeremy and Jason. That's what got me hooked on that sound. It's very American influences, of course. But that particular kind of groove, the three of those get so well. I've not heard anyone else do it quite in the way they do. So I made sure to make one or two of the pieces particularly kind of mould around their strengths.
Thank you.
it's interesting you say that you feel like you it's the same Sam from 20 years ago, because I mean you've gone on to have a very distinguished career. Jason also was for many years with Sting. So how did you sort of keep that youthfulness in a way?
It's a matter of desperately trying to grow up. I mean, when you get us together, and I'm not the worst, it's immediately like kids playing in a sandpit. It's you know, the jokes, in fact, the thing to do is, because time is always of the essence, is to make sure you can actually hone that down and focus on the music, because everyone, there's a slight kind of edge of anarchy about. I mean, this isn't particular to this band. I mean, a lot of jazz, you know,
yes.
A lot of jazz musicians absolutely thrive on that sort of edge of anarchy nature. Now, if you're like me, you're really into the compositional side, then you've got to crack the whip occasionally and say, okay, guys, you know, we've really got to get this, you know, bar 29, let's see if we can get this right. But paradoxically, without that sense of anarchy and playfulness, yeah. and that's Chick through and through, playfulness, he will never feel happy unless he feels entitled and encouraged to really be playful. You won't get the inspiration and the surprise and the joy of the music, you know, without that.
Yeah. You mentioned that actually that was how that album, Return to the Fire.
Enter the Fire was the first one, yeah.
Was how you were introduced to Chick. And I did read a review that where somebody has written that it was a very significant album and that it was showed the promise of this upcoming young jazz musician. But how did it get to Chick? I mean, what was the story behind that?
Well, I knew Joe Locke, and still do, he's a wonderful friend, and subsequently, you know, worked with him a lot, the vibraphone player, New York-based. And I was looking to, you know, sort of expand and start to play with a few more American jazz musicians, so I went to stay with Joe, and I was there for about 20 minutes. I'd just arrived, and he had at that point a flat in Manhattan, and I still had my coat on, and the first thing that Joe said is, oh, you've got your new album, let's put it on, you know, as Joe would, it's all about the music. So we put it on. And as I say, I was sitting there, like 5 minutes later, the telephone rings. Billy Childs, wonderful piano player from Los Angeles, calls up, saying, hey, I'm in town as well. So he had flown almost the same distance as me from London. He says, I'm just around the corner. I'm recording. What are you up to? He said, oh, come over, Billy. You know, there's a friend of mine from England. So Billy comes in, and he's another friend who I've been in touch with ever since. And Billy hears the album and says, oh, this is your album? This is great. Have you got another copy? There's someone I would like to play this to. And so I had another copy. I gave it to Billy. I didn't know at all that that other someone was Chick. And Chick later said to me, he said, well, I knew I had to listen to this album because Billy never gives me anything to listen to. So, and this was, 17 years ago, I guess, now. So that connection was made before I'd even taken my coat off.
That's,
you know, from the airport.
It's just timing sometimes.
Yeah.
And if somebody had said to you 17 years ago that you would still be touring with Chick Corea, what do you think you would have said to them?
I would have assumed that I would have moved to America, and that was quite likely at one point, because I think the most surprising thing is that I've managed to stay based in London and work so much abroad. I mean, the only downside of that is, of course, I've not actually worked that much in the UK.
Right.
So it's actually, funnily enough, next year I'm hoping to rectify that and get my quartet out on the road in the UK, which I'm really looking forward to. And yeah, I would have been very surprised indeed, I think. I mean, Chick, of course, has, as we all know, many projects. So it's not as if the last 17 years I've been working with Chick all the time. I mean, far from it. I've done about 5 projects with him. And there have been many months, of course, when, you know, he's been off doing other things.
Thank you. Do you think that you talked about that you didn't get as many gigs here in the UK? Do you feel that when you have had gigs, it's helped that you have been with a name like Chick Corea? Or has it hindered you in a way?
I don't know. I know from the musical point of view, it most definitely has, because the amount of what I've learned from playing with him and all of the people I've met subsequently, you know, John Patitucci, I've worked with a lot. He's on my Songs to the North Sky album, as well as, you know, great musicians such as Jeffrey Keyser, worked with right. all of this time. But in Chick's band, you learn so much from him as a brilliant band leader that obviously kind of rubs off, and you feel as if you have more to offer as a soloist and as a band leader yourself. And, you know, I feel as if I'm just starting my journey now, really, with all that under my belt. Yeah. And I'd like to think it gives me a lot more to offer as a musician. How it affects in terms of who turns up to my gigs, we'll have to see. You know what jazz is like. You know, no one does this for the money.
You mentioned that you had also a classical background as well, that you're into, and you did study at the Guildhall School of Music. I think sort of you were at one of the start of when they introduced the jazz program.
Yeah. Now, I was never on the jazz course. I studied composition, right. And I studied with Robert Saxton, who's a marvellous composer and teacher, actually. I swapped to the saxophone kind of halfway through because I was sort of drying up as a composer, and at the time I realised in a way that what I was hankering after was that sense of spontaneity. I'd always loved jazz. I remember putting on vinyl, of course, at the time, of some of the first jazz albums I had whilst I was a student, and I had this kind of epiphany. I was thinking, that's it. I must change my first study back to saxophone. So I begged them at the Guildhall to change, and so I remained kind of on the classical course, but studying saxophone instead. And I like to think in a way that sort of the following two decades, it was slowly drawing together all those influences from the composition side and the playing side. And over the last more recent years, it's really come together. And, you know, I've sort of finally found a way of not kind of keeping these things separate, but by making this nice kind of hybrid where you can be as completely yourself as you can, you know.
Mm. And was that where you met Jason Rebello?
At the Guildhall, yeah. He was about the year below me, I think. He was a bit of a child star, you know. Jason had kind of got this big deal and was into the kind of funk side. Of course, that's my generation too. I was brought up listening to the Crusaders and, you know, well the Brecker Brothers, of course, and bands like that.
Right.
As well as a lot of the sort of ECM things. I'd listen to a lot of Keith Jarrett and, you know, and then later Bill Evans and the sort of softer side, I guess you could say. But one thing which never left me was this interest in the sort of fusion-y side. And Jason is one of those, the few actually really brilliant piano players who also has a natural ability on keyboards as well. You know, Fender Rhodes, Moogs, that kind of deep sense of groove he's got. And he's in my current quartet, which we're touring the UK, hooray, next year. And so I'm encouraging him to bring keyboards as well, and we'll kind of have a bit of an electric thing going.
It's interesting for me because also growing up in the 80s, and you mentioned Jason Rebello, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, there was also, I think Cleveland Watkiss was also at the Guildhall at that time.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Steve Williamson.
Yep.
And to me, it's a very sort of organic, I don't know. I found the music very exciting in those days. And I don't know if there's something that's been lost over the years. Or has it changed?
I think it's changed. And I think that rather than, it's just more diverse now. I mean, there was a lot of diversity back then, of course, but now even more so. So you've got maybe people who are such as, say, Vijay in the States, working with Marcus Gilmore, the drummer, and they are consummate at playing these like amazingly complex rhythmical. So it sounds almost mathematical, but there's a lot of beauty in there as well. Some people find that a little esoteric, I guess, you know, as when you compare that to kind of down and out funk that a lot of people also play. I love the fact there's so much diversity. And of course, being abroad a lot, I get asked all the time, what's the London scene like? What is UK jazz? You know, and one of the best answers I've got is that, you know, London is big enough to attract so many different place people from around the world that it is a true melting pot, and at least as much as New York. Actually, we have so much to offer here.
Do you feel that's what's kept your edge with your playing, is that the fact that you did stay in London so that you can see all this diversity?
I think what keeps your edge has to be in the marrow of your bones an absolute love of the music, because despite it all, you know, because there are a lot of lows and uncertainties. You know, I had to go through a whole series where I had to remortgage my house, and we had serious illness in the family and had to relocate a long way from London, and a lot of things which would be considered, you know, real major challenges. I think what keeps my edge, I suppose, the thing which raises my passion the fastest is when I'm working with inspiring musicians, and I'll travel anywhere to do that. And fortunately, I've been able to sort of almost commute between here and New York for many years. And, you know, that's especially working, say, with Chick and the people who work around Chick. That definitely kicked my ass severely over the years.
Coming back to your album, as it was recently released on the Edition Record label, and you mentioned that you are going to be touring with it next year.
Yes. All the signs look very fair for about 14 or 15 dates in the UK next year. I think the first one is in May, but it's kind of spread throughout the year. I'm very much hoping to get out to Europe as well. That quartet, Asaf Sirkis, of course, who I've worked with a lot over the years, I love his playing because he adds not just the regular drum kit, but all of the percussion he's got. It's always been like a core value of mine to make sure that everyone in the band does something unique and which brings out the absolute sort of best in them. Asaf, of course, I know really well. Lighthouse was the trio with great Gwilym Simcock, of course, for many years. So we've got a strong rapport there. Jason, of course, having Jason back in the band is just wonderful. He's a real joker as well, so there's always a lot of laughter. And we've got the new boy on the block, really, is Ant Law. Now, Ant's a wonderful guitar player, and one thing I particularly like about him is he's really great at acoustic as well as electric playing. And as you can hear, there's no bass player. There's no dedicated bass player in this band, and it was the same with Lighthouse. It was a bassless band. What? I hear all the jazzers say. How can you function without the bass? But we manage, and it produces a different kind of composition.
Right.
If you've got a piano player with a great left hand, and you also have guitar, and sometimes plays eight-string guitar, which goes way down and calves the bass register, there's all kind of ways you can rewrite the music to fit that ensemble. And I think it forces us into a greater creativity. You know, there's quite often it's not a case of adding something new. If you pull something away, whether it be drums or, you know, you pull one element away, it forces you into a greater creativity. It's my hope, anyway.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see how you apply that also to all your other different projects as well. I'm thinking of the Lomas
Oh, Lammas.
Lammas, sorry.
Yeah, well, of course, that had no bass either. But right. we're going back a long time there. Mark Fletcher, great, the drummer, and Don Patterson on acoustic guitars. And I did a little bit of keyboards. I think we were probably one of the first to incorporate Celtic music in quite that way. Mm. There have been quite a few bands since. And it's not everything we did kind of worked amazingly. It was quite experimental. But we did 5 albums with Lammas. And there's on every one of them, there's one or two real jewels I love, even now, you know, after all those years.
So what's next for you? I thought I heard a little bird tell me that you've got another album coming out next year.
Yes, and now that is The Quartet. And the album is called One, O-N-E.
Okay.
And it's a real, I think, a celebration. It's a very, probably the most percussive album that I've ever created. There's, apart from Asaf, there's going to be one, maybe two percussion guests, Hossam Ramsey, the Egyptian percussionist. And I like to feel that it is a celebration of unity. You know, I don't really want my music to kind of be in some kind of jazz bubble somewhere. This, there's a semi rhythm, which is a traditional Arabic rhythm in 10, very beautiful rhythm. And there's a big anthemic piece I've written for everyone called Semi for Peace. And in the same way as all of the percussive elements in the band, you've all got to know where beat one is, the same one. We all work from the same one. Well, you know, it's a play on words, isn't it? But it's like we are a unity. And there's never been a greater need now for music to be a carrier wave for peace, you know?
There's no boundaries with music.
There are no boundaries, of course, that's right. I mean, just in Italy, I've just come back from Italy where we were playing in Pescara, and two of the guys in the band had no English, and my Italian is more or less zero, apart from some musical expressions. And we were just laughing and hugging each other and playing and enjoying, and you know, and that was hopefully very apparent to the audience how much we were enjoying it. And you think, this is the function, this is what we should be doing. It's our duty, really, to add something as good as we can.
Yes. I'm curious, music has been your life, but if you hadn't have been a musician, what do you think you might have done?
When I was younger, I was very interested in carpentry. And I would have loved to, you know, pursue that, actually. I don't think I was very good. I think I'm a little bit impatient, actually. It's one of my negative points. I've always also been interested in Buddhism. And that's helped me a great deal in making sense of, you know, the crazy world that we live in. And, of course, there's lots of types and etc. And I don't feel, you know, evangelical about it, but it is an important part of who I am, I guess. And there was one point where I thought, right, I'm going to become a recluse. I think that lasted about a week and a half at the time because I'm so attached to music. But either a carpenter or a Buddhist monk.
Tim, thank you so much for taking the time to come in and
talk
with me about the album. And we look forward to hearing the new one and to seeing you guys on tour.
You bet.
Mm-hmm.